Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the light-headed voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew.
Morning.
Good morning. Yes, light-headed indeed.
So, you've only just revealed this to me and I said, tell me no more. I want, again, I love to hear these stories firsthand without hearing them before. So I'm hearing this for the first time with our blessed listeners right now.
Indeed. And you're asking this with a smile on your face, and I'd ask that, you know, just be a little bit more sympathetic to the situation, because it is true. I very nearly fainted on Tuesday. It was one of those moments where, so I had my blood taken, and I won't give the exact reason for why I had it taken. We can touch that in a minute. But I had my blood taken, and so they do the whole thing where they kind of like put the thing around your arm to get the vein to really come out that little bit more. Now, I'll be honest, I'm not brilliant with needles at the best of times. And so there's a girl that was doing it. She's gone into the vein. And again, if you're a bit squeamish, probably switch off for the next 30 seconds, minute or so, because I'm going to describe in detail the way that I remember it and exactly why I did feel very lightheaded and was in a pool of sweat for about a minute. So she's gone into the vein. She's tried to take the blood, but failed. So then she's gone in again, failed, gone in again, failed. And I'll be honest, I'm just not great with needles. So the third time she did it, she then said, you know, it's not going to happen, let's do it on your other arm. And I was like, nah, you're okay. And then I left.
What do you mean you left? Was it important? Did you need to get blood taken for an important purpose?
No, not important at all. No. And you know, I'll be very open about this. Some of you, in fact, you see, this isn't a secret. One of the reasons this isn't a secret is that I actually did a lot of advertising for it. So I had my hair done many years ago that you're aware of, I believe, Matthew.
Okay.
And there's a procedure they do like once a year. I think it's called PRP, I think it's called, where effectively they take some blood, they get the plasma from the blood, and they then re-inject it back into your head, which promotes growth. So there you go, I've taught you something now. So I go for this every year. So there you go, it's a big secret that is now out. And it was effectively for that. But ordinarily, they get the blood the first time, and then I've got enough time to recover. The situation here was that I hadn't had lunch. I wasn't feeling great anyway. They'd tried to take the blood three times. I was in a rush for another meeting. And so I just said, look, give me a couple of minutes. And I just lay there, closed my eyes for a couple of minutes, recovered. And then I just said, look, I don't want it done. And I left. That's the story.
Hang on.
You've got questions.
I mean, I'm sure a lot of people who are listening now have got chins on floor, surely, because what are you talking about? So hang on. So you got your hair done, yeah, right? You had the plugs in. That's fine. Looks great. Well done. Not plugs.
That's the wrong word, but yeah, yeah.
No, it's a type of treatment. That's FUE, I believe.
That's the one, yes.
So you had that done, and in order for that to continue working, you have to have blood taken. It gets injected into your head.
Mm. Yes.
Whereabouts in your head does it get injected?
All over.
So it's not just one injection?
No. They then sort of put it all over in order to help promote growth. There's lots of different, in fact, anyone out there, you older gentlemen listening in, and I know there's one or two older gentlemen that do listen in, those that use like Regain as a good example, where they'll put that on their head in order to help promote growth. It's a very similar idea. So you don't have to have had the transplant or the procedure in order to have it. But yeah, it just promotes growth by having that blood, that plasma put in. I don't know the exact ins and outs. I did quite a lot of research on it before I first had it done. I know it's quite popular now. But yeah, just the actual process of, and really by now, I think it is, this is going to be my justification, my excuse, the amount of injections you have as a footballer for different things, and that sounds really dodgy, like I'm some Lance Armstrong of football, but no, the amount of different injections that you just have, like over the, we used to have to do it every morning where we'd go in and they'd take a bit of blood from our finger and do like a blood test most days in order to see what your vitamin D levels are and whether you're in a place to train, etc. I think I've just got to the point where I just really dislike needles.
Really?
Mm.
I remember reading, actually, there was a book years ago for Club and Country, if I remember. It was a book written or ghost written by Gary Neville and Phil Neville, I think in the lead up to the 1998 World Cup, I think it was, or that season, in the lead up to that season, to that summer. And Gary Neville, I specifically remember him saying under, I think it might have been under Glenn Hoddle, all the different pills and potions and injections they had to take. He said after a while, it got quite difficult, quite tiring to have to keep doing that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It was very similar at Brentford, actually. You'd come in the morning and you'd have your shake to take. You'd have however many different tablets and bits and pieces. Then you'd have to go and do a urine test, a blood test. And I get it. Like, they want to make sure. And certainly now, and I've touched on my Whoop a few times recently, certainly now the science behind what goes on, you know, the being able to predict injury being a big thing. You know, they know that somebody's depleted and they're going in. Of course, it increases your risk of injury. Lads that have been out on the weekend that are training on the Monday and aren't 100%, their immune system down, etc. Of course, there's more chance of you getting injured. And if you are injured, you get yourself an injury for however many weeks. Of course, that's money that's lost for the club, not having a player available. And so now it's becoming more and more structured, I guess I'd say, in terms of how they operate to make sure that everything is maximised.
We always bring it back.
We do. We find a way. So
we
from
do find a way.
Hair procedures to being the best goalkeeper you can be.
So you didn't actually get it done in the end. So is that going to affect what happens moving forward?
I mean, I'm reasonably pleased with where I am at the moment, follically. Is that the word?
That's fine.
Let's go with that. Yep. So no, I'm okay. So I just, and to be honest, I was in a bit of a rush for my next meeting. So I just said to him, look, at some point I'll go back, I'm sure, but it's fine. They because I've done so much advertising for them in the past, there was no cost or anything like that. So, and they are very, very good, I have to say. I'll give them a bit of a shout out. DHI Global in London, they are very good.
Oh, there we go. I didn't know this was happening.
There you go.
It's a flaming endorsement. That's all he wanted to do.
That's all it was. Yeah. So no, I'll give them, they are very good. But no, on this occasion, I didn't have it done. I'm sure at some point I will. I just need to recover first. Do you know, I kind of feel like we're going to have talked more about hair today than goalkeeping, because there's not loads today, is there?
Well, we've padded it out.
We're going to still make this a worthwhile podcast.
Yeah, we're going to speak a bit about the League One and League Two action in the week, some ups, some downs, and a bit of Champions League chat too. Let's get on with it, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Rightio, before we begin, Richard, we've had some correspondence in from a Graham Young of Edinburgh. He wants to talk Matt Macey of Hibernian. Of course, moved there from Arsenal in January, I believe, didn't he, until the end of the season. Now, this was regarding the Scottish Cup quarterfinal between Hibs and Motherwell. We spoke about another quarterfinal in the last podcast, didn't we, with Xander Clark scoring that header for St Johnstone. Now, two goals were conceded in the final 10 minutes by Hibernian. They were 2-0 up. They went 2-0 up on 80 minutes. Graham has sent us in some clips and says, ex-Arsenal goalkeeper Matt Macey, 6'7", on loan at Hibs, concedes two goals. We scraped through on penalties in cup quarterfinals, but these two late goals almost threw away our cup chances. Hib fans are furiously debating online whether the goals are errors on Macey's part. Could he have done a bit better, or nothing he could have done? His positioning looks odd. He doesn't get a dive away either time, but are we using hindsight by saying that? What if the shot had gone in the other corner? It would be great to get Rich's take on it on the podcast. I know you don't often look at the Scottish game. The goalkeeper position is definitely not well served by analysts up here. Enjoying the podcast and the book. My son is a goalie and is learning a lot from your analysis. Thanks, guys.
Great stuff. Great question. Appreciate that coming in. Firstly, apologies to your son for the first 7 minutes of the show being about hair follicles. Really interesting one, this, because, of course, you're watching it and the commentators wouldn't blame a goalkeeper for this. And how many times do we touch on this? That let's say he had have dived and it had gone through his hands and gone in the goal. It would then be his fault. But the fact that he doesn't dive, it's almost seen as not being his fault because it looks like it's too far out of reach. I suppose my question with this is, does it become a mistake if you don't dive? If you don't put an effort in, does that then constitute a mistake? Now, you could argue that yes, it does, because ultimately the ball comes across and you want to plant yourself ready for a shot and then you want to explode. Now, whether you get there or not is irrelevant to an extent. What you train for is in order to get yourself into the best possible position. Again, we talk about probability a lot, the best position you can possibly find for that particular moment. And then it's being as explosive as you can in the moment to try and cover the goal and make the save. Now, does he make the saves? We'll never know. But I think that's the point, is that we'll never know because he wasn't able to get the dive away. So for me, look, is it an error or not? I know we touch on this a lot. The disappointment for me is the fact that he didn't get a dive away. I just think that, you know, he is obviously a very, very good goalkeeper. I know he's made the move up there and was highly rated at Arsenal. He went to Plymouth and maybe didn't get the number of games that he would have wanted to have got. But I think, you know, a situation like this for me, that's the big question mark that I'd have. If I see a goalkeeper that doesn't dive, whether it's a, you know, free kick that goes over the wall in the top corner or whether it's a situation like this, I'd always encourage a goalkeeper, for habit, if nothing else, to get that dive away. And you know what? Sometimes you just never know. You might think you've got absolutely no chance, but how many times have we had it as a goalkeeper where you just throw yourself and you surprise yourself at times by getting a hand to it?
It's interesting that Graham references the fact that Macy is 6'7". As well. I'm not suggesting that has anything to do with these two particular goals, but again, an example of an absolute giant of a goalkeeper.
Yeah, he's a big guy, really big guy. I mean, in terms of, and again, watching the bits that I've seen of him, and again, I'll be completely transparent at this point, I've seen quite a lot, but not loads, because of course he has spent a lot of time at Arsenal behind the scenes. So I probably haven't seen as much as I'd like to have seen. And I get the bits every day that I get on Google where I read reports on him and get a general idea as to what fans are thinking about him up at Hibs. But when you look at him as a specimen, you know, fantastic. Now, in terms of height, it's an interesting one that he does bring it up, because then you could argue that maybe if you're a bit smaller, does that give you certain strengths in terms of being a bit more nimble, a bit quicker around your goal? And, you know, we're going to be talking about a couple of goalkeepers later who are that little bit smaller in terms of their stature, but their strength is very much their speed. So then does it make it easier in that case if you're maybe slightly smaller? The argument of being 6'7", is that too big? Well, surely not, if you've got the explosive power of a lot of the goalkeepers that we see that are 6'2", 6'3". There's no reason you can't have that and be 6'7" and use it as an additional strength. Similarly, if you are that bit smaller and you can maximize the various bits and pieces, you can counteract the different negatives that come from being that little bit smaller.
You've got one more message that you'd like to read out.
Yeah, for no reason that other than, let me just read it out, because it's actually nothing. There's nothing here of substance, but it was essentially a... In fact, I'll just give him a shout out, because it's a young goalkeeper called Sam Blair, who is at Norwich, doing very, very well at Norwich, progressed through their under-18s and has signed a professional contract. So big congratulations to him. He's also been involved in the Ireland youth squads with Rennie Gilmartin, really enjoyed the camp. So we got a message in, just letting me know how he had found the camp, really enjoyed it, enjoyed working with Rennie. It was the fact that he gave us a compliment, first and foremost, said he loved the Schmeichel podcast, best ever in my view, amazing journey and super insights. Having a board is 100% the way to go, excellent advice. And it was just the final line, really, that I wanted to read out, which was, finally then, Schmeichel definitely flicked it on. Mm. That was the only reason I wanted to read it out, was just, again, further proof that he did flick it on. Again, we've already had the poll. Did we have a poll for the next argument?
No,
that we had?
Didn't.
You didn't
no,
bother
we didn't
with that
do
one.
That, no,
okay,
no,
right.
I don't think we needed to do that. So you're right, really. Zero substance in that message. Absolutely. So, you know, whatever. We'll move on, shall we? If you'd like to get in touch with us, very, very easy to do so on Twitter at GKUnion, hello at goalkeepersunion.net, or on our phone number 075-0367-3020. Let's quickly, Richard, touch on the Champions League. No major thrills and spills, really, in terms of goalkeeping, but a bit of goalkeeping chat. We'll get on to Keylor Navas in PSG's defeat against Manchester City. But first, a save from Thibaut Courtois from Timo Werner in the 1-1 draw between Real Madrid and Chelsea.
Yeah, excellent save. And I know a lot of the focus was more on Werner and whether he could have done a little bit better with the finish. But in fairness to Werner, he's come in, he's connected well, and ordinarily, 9 times out of 10, this ends up in the back of the net. The reason for me this is such a good save, and actually, the funny that we're just talking about height and size, obviously, Courtois is somebody that is very, very tall, big goalkeeper. So this, for me, was the reach with his leg, the speed of thought as well. You can see as he moves, it's not luck. It's a deliberate movement with his foot to go to a certain position, which, look, when you're trying to break this down and you're considering Werner, you're considering his body shape, you're looking at where the likelihood is that he's going to finish. There's so much you're having to process in a split second. And so when I see Courtois, he's effectively put his body, his leg, where he's predicting the ball's about to go. And that's the bit I love about this, is I think that he's had to process so much in a split second, and to then put himself in the position he does, taking probability and considering where the likelihood is that the ball's going to end up, I just think it's an excellent, excellent save.
All things considered with that then, because Glenn Hoddle was fuming, saying he's got to score. Werner has to score. He's given the goalkeeper a chance. He was a bit hesitant. Chelsea fans will look at that and say he has to score. Where do you stand on that comment, really? Because if you are 6 yards out as a striker and you are unchallenged and the ball's coming at you lovely on the volley to just sweep home and the goalkeeper saves it, his teammates, his fans might say, you've missed that, you should have scored. But the goalkeeper can only do what the goalkeeper can do, right? And what you're saying there as to what Courtois has done is exactly what he could have done. So surely that's more of a brilliant save from the goalkeeper than a miss, in inverted commas, by the striker.
It's all perspective. You know, if you're a Chelsea fan or you're an English commentator or you're an ex-outfield player, then yeah, your perspective is very much going to be what could have Werner have done more. Whereas I'm sure that Real Madrid fans would have been, well, that's a fantastic save. So I think it all, and look, for us goalkeeping pundits that we are, or I am, I don't know, do you count? I guess you are now in that category. Do we give you an honorary membership?
Not
quite.
Not a pundit.
No, but goalkeeping, but of course, we're going to look at the goal. So I think it's all about perspective. Now, if you look at this really logically, could Werner have done a little bit more? Well, of course, he could have smashed it in the top corner and then there's absolutely no chance of the goalkeeper saving it. But in terms of his finish, it's probably a 7 out of 10. He's come in, he's connected well. And as I say, 9 times out of 10, this ends up in the back of the net. If it ends up in the back of the net, they're saying it's a great finish, even though it's the exact same finish which has just been saved. So for me, and that for that reason alone, I would then always compliment the goalkeeper on the save, because I just think that he's read the situation, read exactly what Werner's going to do in that split second, and put himself in the most likely position to make the save.
Okay, PSG, City, and the equaliser from Kevin De Bruyne. We've seen these types of goals many times before. Perhaps not as central. Brilliant ball into the box, it has to be said. Could Keylor Navas have saved this?
Look, tricky one. Very tricky one. The interesting bit for me on this is that if you look at Keylor Navas, where his eyes go. So as the ball's crossed in, he takes his eyes off the ball and he's looking then at the men in front of him, expecting the header. Again, a lot of us will have faced a very similar situation to this. I remember one personally, actually, when I was playing at the Hawthorns, playing against West Brom back in the day for Watford. Very similar goal. Now, in my case, the guy did actually get a header, but it still went in the same corner. And I remember having a conversation with Alec Chamberlain, the coach, after, and he was asking whether my movement was the correct movement, because I did very similar to what Navas did, where I then instantly got myself back into the centre of the goal, set, ready for the shot, or ready for the header, which, although it did come, and it was just the most... It was like a glanced header. It was the faintest of headers. It still ended up in that corner anyway. So the question was, well, could I have almost predicted the initial ball and had the mentality of, if there is no touch, I'm going to make the save. If there is a touch, I'm still in a decent enough position to give myself a chance of making a save still. Whereas in this one, what's ended up happening is he has gambled completely that a header would come and he'd have to then make the save. And of course, the fact that it doesn't actually get that close to any players, naturally, it doesn't look very good at all.
Difficult to watch or listen to at times, that game as well, purely from the loving perspective towards outfield players. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because you don't often hear this type of loving directed at goalkeepers. Sometimes you do, but certainly not as often as you do towards the likes of Kevin De Bruyne, Kylian Mbappe and Neymar. And yesterday in the first half, Neymar, my word, all he had to do was deliver a 5-yard pass. Would you just look at that? Look at that. What a pass. He's just got magic in his feet, hasn't he? And you think, can we just calm down? Yes, he's a world-class player. But what he's just done there is no different to what every other player on the pitch is doing. But again, that narrative that is just brought into some of these players, specifically Kevin De Bruyne, actually, you always hear it. And again, a world-class player, but they have to do the smallest thing. And when they do something that actually isn't that great, not referenced at all.
Yeah, and that's, again, perspective. I use that same word in that it's often punditry from an ex-outfield player that can appreciate those types of things and have built somebody up in their mind. And look, ultimately, we have seen it with goalkeepers. You're right, it's quite rare, but it'll often be when a goalkeeper has come in and they've had a great first couple of games and they're riding the crest of a wave and it just feels like everything they're doing is getting so much positivity. Everything in the press, every article you see is they're this, that, the other. And then at some point that will change and then it will change back and then it will change. And I just think that so much of this is perspective. Look, we're probably guilty of it on this show. You know, there's certain goalkeepers that we talk about, and if they've made an error, we'll be very quick to say how unusual it is, how unlikely it is, and how great they are and what have you, because similarly, our perspective our version of goalkeeping reality. That's the term I'd use. We have already positioned goalkeepers and see goalkeepers a certain way. We've built them up in our mind, and we will often, you see what you want to see. You know, I suppose, a saying that I do go by, and that, you know, if you really are adamant that a goalkeeper is fantastic and it's a conviction of yours, it's going to take a lot for somebody to convince you otherwise.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Let's blast through the best of the rest from the EFL, shall we?
Let's do it.
A humdinger of a game between Accrington and Portsmouth. Goalmouth in horrendous condition, by the way. It was wet and windy throughout the Football League, and you just saw some pitches almost like ice rinks, especially up at Valley Parade. Bradford, we'll get onto that game in a minute. But in this one, Portsmouth 2-0 down, then 3-2 up. Then, with nearly the last kick of the game, Craig McGillivray palmed into the shins of John Marquis, who inadvertently put it into his own net.
Yeah, a frustrating one, this one. And I think with any parry, there's always going to be an element of luck. The moment that you're not able to hold the ball and you are trying to put it into a safe area, you are always reliant on luck, even if it's the perfect parry. Unless it goes out for a corner, even if you're putting it out wide, there's always a chance that someone's going to come in and finish it. And of course, when they do, people ask questions. But that's completely out of your control. You're in control of the initial action, which is the parry itself. Now, for me, this one is one where McGillivray has decided to parry, I think largely based on the fact that you've just touched on, that it was a wet, windy, horrible night, probably wasn't going to be easy to hold this ball, so he's decided to parry. Now, has the area he's parried it into, is it a good area? I'd say so. You know, it's out wide, it would have gone out towards the touchline for a throw-in. So, in terms of what he can control, it's not bad. And ordinarily, again, 9 times out of 10, this will be then cleared or go to safety and it will be marked down as a solid save. The fact that he's fired it, and he has parried it hard as well because he tried to get distance to make sure he could get it away from the goal. But of course, in doing that, it's just unlucky for me. The fact that he's parried it so hard into his player and it's then ended up, of all places, it could then go off his shins to then go in the goal in the 90th minute, etc., etc., etc. It's a tough place to be sometimes, being a goalkeeper, and that you feel like you could do everything right but still get the wrong result.
Rochdale's Jay Lynch with an eventful game as well in another humdinger and another 3-3 draw. First, he collided with his own man for Wimbledon's equaliser at 2-2. He then made a brilliant save to deny Ryan Longman at 3-2 up. Great save, that one. And then he saved a Joe Piggott penalty. Twice in a week, Joe Piggott having a penalty saved.
Yeah, no, really eventful game. Firstly, to touch on the great save, because it really was a phenomenal save. The way in which he's changed his position in order to make this save. So there's a few parts of this I want to touch on. Firstly, speed. The speed at which he got himself into position, the adjustment he makes, and the intelligence he shows when he's realized that they're going to get there first by him just throwing himself in head first, probably isn't going to get the desired outcome. So you see the moment where he suddenly changes his thought process, sets, and throws himself to his left, similar to the Courtois one earlier we were talking about, and that in that split second, he's made a prediction as to where he thinks the ball's going to end up, and then showed speed again in order to get down there. It is a fantastic save, arguably the save of the night, I would say. And then at the same time, a very frustrating one, the one in which he's come for, collided, and it is a tough one, this, because slightly late in coming, you might say, and that he kind of semi-hesitates, thinks about it. But when he does come, again, it's one of these where, look, at first I wonder whether this might be a foul, but I think it is his defender, isn't it, that he collides into. But there's a lot to this. I think he will have given a big shout. You're kind of hoping your defenders will then give you some protection, allow you to try and pick the ball up. But in the end, obviously collides with the defender, the ball drops, it's an easy finish, and naturally people ask questions. But I think it's a tough one because, again, we have all been there. Often you'll come, you can't know exactly what's coming in. Yes, you can use your peripheral vision to an extent to see who is there, but ultimately you see the ball, you want to try and scoop it in the way that he did. If someone collides with you in that manner, more often than not, you're going to drop the ball.
Charlton 2, Crewe 2, and the second Alex goal scored by Alex Gilby through the legs of Will Jaskulainen.
I felt from here. I mean, it doesn't look great, But I think it's so close in and there's enough pace on the ball that ordinarily when you set, there is a gap between your legs. You know, very few people set with a real narrow stance. Most have a shoulder width or even wider than that. So if you can imagine the ball being fired in from 6 yards as it was through your legs, you're either going to close your legs very quickly, or in this case, Jäkeläinen almost tries to get his hands down. It's one of those real awkward, horrible ones where you try and throw everything at it. You try and close your legs, get your hands down, do whatever you can at the same time and end up crumpled up in a heap. It's one of them again, which doesn't look good because as you've just stated, it's gone through his legs and people will question that. But you consider what's had to happen for that ball to go in the goal and the movement that he would have needed to have done to have made the save. You could argue that that was one of the most vulnerable spots it could have gone in. And unfortunately, it did beat him on this occasion.
Bit of geeky goalkeeping humour in League One. Kieran O'Hara was given a run in Burton's 5-2 demolition of Fleetwood. Now, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank did say it was just a good chance to have a look at him ahead of next season. I don't think Ben Garrett was even included in the match day squad. Made a decent save at 3-1. The Sam Finley goal at 2-1, however, quite funny. And also quite a funny, I don't know whether it's funny, but an interesting to watch moment with Alex Cairns as well conceding from a Burton free kick.
Yeah, well, the free kick, it was just the fact that it was a brilliant free. I don't think you're going to see a better free kick this season in that it's gone right in the top corner to the point where it's hit the post, where the post meets the bar, then it's fired back across the goal and nestled in the bottom corner of the other side. It could not have been more perfect. There's not a goalkeeper on the planet that saves this. So I always wonder how you react when you have a moment like this. And it was just the look on Alex Cairns' face, which just really made me laugh, where it was just, do you know what? That's incredible. Fine. Come on, let's go. And it was just, sometimes there's just nothing you can do. And I think that moment, that expression for me, that sums up goalkeeping a lot of times when it's, do you know what? There is just so little you can do at times. There's only so much a goalkeeper can do. And in that moment, you could see that he's just accepted it and moved on within a split second.
Brilliant. Like the Tim Flowers back in the late 90s, that game between Newcastle and Blackburn. Do you remember Keith Gillespie, long ball over the top, took it on his chest and volleyed it over Tim Flowers into the back of the net. Tim Flowers just looked and just scratched his head.
Yeah,
just scratch his head. No, don't know what happened there. Nothing. Game on.
There you go. Is what it is. No, 100%. I think. And then the O'Hara one was, it was interesting for me because it was one of those where the striker goes around the goalkeeper and you've got that decision. Do you dive and try and get a hand to the ball and claw it away? And often you'll miss it and you'll bring the striker down and it'll end up being a penalty, sending off, whatever else, although maybe not now with double jeopardy and all that. But it was just the, whether it's the awareness, and you could look at this different ways. Perhaps you'd look at this and say, you should go for it and see if you can get the ball. But he's semi-gone for it and then made that split-second decision to just put his arms away and just let the striker glide by and put it in the net. It was just a really unusual passage of play. Ordinarily, that will end up in either a goalkeeper making a save or a big collision and a penalty being given. But to see a goalkeeper pull back in the last minute and do what he did, and in the end, it probably was the right decision because I think that realistically, he would have given away a penalty. There might have been other repercussions. And in that moment, I think the last thing he wants as well, being given his chance, probably doesn't want a red card if that was a possibility. So I get it, but you're right. It was just a very unusual situation to see.
And finally, in League One, Chris Maxwell, not for the first time this season, coming to Blackpool's rescue yet again. Three good saves in the win over Sunderland, notably from Charlie Wyke.
Yeah, brilliant. Incredible, their run and the fact that they've pretty much secured, I believe, now a playoff place. If it's not confirmed yet, it certainly will be, I'm sure. And he's been a huge part of that. Look, he's been consistent throughout the season. And this game, I think, will, you would argue, be the icing on the cake. I know he's had several very, very good games, but I think a game of this magnitude to pull out a performance like that, and a couple of the saves in particular, a couple to his left in the first half, which were good. One, which I thought was very clever, a little bit different, ball pitching just in front of him to his left, and the awareness of those that are around him, again, split second decision. He almost scoops it out back into play, but with power in order to get it into safety. I thought it was a very clever save. Point blank save in the second half. Again, we talk about the Courtois save. We talked about the save from Lynch as well. Similarities to this in that he's put himself in an excellent position, speed to get across the goal to do that. But arguably the save of the bunch is the last one. And there's something about a clawed save. I don't know what it is. And I'm going to bring up Schmeichel again. I bring him up all the time. But this is Schmeichel away at Newcastle. You know the one I'm referring to. There's a lot of pictures of this save when he's thrown himself to his left and there's a claw type save that he makes that I can picture in my mind. And I just think there is something very special about that type of save. And that's exactly what he's done here. It looks like it's going in the top corner. And I've no doubt someone will have that moment where the ball's in his glove and he just, it's like time stands still for a split second while the keeper is in that position and he just manages to claw it out. It's a brilliant save.
Into League 2, Mark Howard of Scunthorpe. Not too dissimilar to the goal conceded by Jay Lynch we spoke about a moment ago. He came for a long throw. There was a very audible shout of keepers, but it spilled through him. And Newport with a big win.
Yeah, big win. Tough night for him and obviously a tough time for Scunthorpe at the moment, it's fair to say. The interesting thing for me on this one is, look, it's a long throw. And long throws are so tough to come for. I really do think that. And more often than not, goalkeepers don't come for them. You see a lot that would much rather stay on the line and wait for the second phase of play and try and affect it then. You know, we always touch back on the Roy Delap days and what have you. They're so, so difficult if you've got someone that can launch it right into the six-yard box. And I think that this one, you could see Mark Howard's movement that he didn't quite pick it up. That's what it appeared to me anyway, because he's come out and it's not your conventional two steps, knee up, come take the cross. It was a case of he's kind of moving right, left, not quite sure where it's going to go. The ball's obviously moving in flight a little bit and ultimately he just mishandles it. You know, I love the fact that he has come. I love the positivity that he's shown. It was the right decision. He does get there first. He does get two hands on it. But to make it very, very simple, he just mistimes the catch ever so slightly. And unfortunately, he gets the ultimate punishment.
Hokey cokey keepers at Newport as well. Tom King has been back in for the past three games. Three clean sheets, two wins and a draw. And also in this game, very close to providing an assist for Nicky Maynard, I think it was. I don't know whether this has happened before, but he's obviously scored this season. I think that was in the Football League Trophy, wasn't it, against Cheltenham from memory. Has there been a goalkeeper in a single season who's both scored and assisted? Now, of course, this isn't both in league competition. If he had made the assist, it didn't go in, sadly. This is all irrelevant because it bounced, hit the bar and went over. But has there been a goalkeeper who's done both?
It's a great question. I mean, you're asking me, I'd have absolutely no
idea.
First
person to
However,
ask.
What I would say is then, is that one where, and I don't know what the script is with Tom King next season. I believe he's out of contract, so we'll see where he ends up next season. But as part of the negotiation, does he get a goal bonus and an assist bonus in there?
Ah, very good.
Might be a consideration.
Might be. Need to have a word with him.
I will.
Salford with a massive win away at Bradford to move into the playoffs just at the right time. It's all happening, isn't it, in the final few weeks of the season, especially in the clean sheet club too, because Vaclav Hladký, or Václav, according to the Salford commentators. I need you to get onto this. You need to speak to him and find out exactly how you pronounce his first name, because we've been calling him Vaclav. If we've been getting it wrong, that's poor from us. Same with Craig McGillivray. The Portsmouth commentators say McGilvery. So which one is it?
Again, you're asking the wrong person, but great question. If you guys know, do let us know.
Please do.
Easy to do so.
two saves from Hladký. First from Charles Vernon, then from Andy Cook. Good to see him celebrating at the end too, because it was a last-minute winner from Ian Henderson. They are coming into form just at the right time.
Yeah, huge, huge win for Salford. And he's certainly been key. For anybody that does check out goalkeeping stats, he's top of everything. I think him and Lawrence Vigouroux have been the two outstanding goalkeepers in League 2 consistently, I think it's fair to say. And the saves in particular, the second one, very, very good. Two saves to his left. The first one, really sharp, low strike, going in what would have been the near post, but brilliant save to get down, fingertips around. But it was the second one where he's had to drop, and he isn't able to drop back into what I'd say would be the optimum position. So he's, but it's again, it's just the awareness to then set where he is and understand that if he had to drop more, he probably would have conceded here. So he gets to a point, sets, probably on about his 6 yard box, but explodes to his left and makes a very, very good save. And as I say, he's been certainly vital for them this season.
He has indeed, and if that win put Salford into the playoffs, no sooner did Forest Green Rovers slip out of the playoffs due to another big win by Barrow this time. They subsequently secured another season in League 2 as a result. It may not have been match winning, but Joel Dixon still had a part to play. He's had a pretty decent season in League 2 with Barrow, their first campaign in the league for a long, long time, and a decent tip over from Bailey Cargill.
Very good. Do you know the note I made here? He should have made a bit more of it. That's all I felt on this one, which I know probably goes against a lot of what we talk about, goalkeepers making it look easy, etc. But this was one of them where it's actually a really, really good save. And if anything, I wanted to see him throw himself, like when he's made the save. So he's at full stretch, but he somehow managed to stay on his feet, which then a lot of people then would just naturally go past this save, and I'm surprised that he even made it on the highlights, the fact that he has stayed in his feet. But I think had he have actually allowed himself to go, I think people will be talking about this save in a much bigger way.
Barrow stay up. Grimsby, however, go back down into the National League. They threw away a 2-1 lead at Exeter, but was James McKeown fouled for the Alex Fisher equaliser?
It looked that way. I think this is one that if you've got VAR, I think it's near enough certain to be a foul on the goalkeeper because he's bundled over effectively, which means he has no chance of making the save. It's hard to see given the camera angle that we've got, but you can certainly see that there is a coming together. He then finds himself on the floor with the other player. And of course, it's a very simple finish then when the ball breaks from the corner and the goalkeeper's lying on the floor. So I think, yes, it should have been a foul. The fact that Grimsby have gone down, whether it had made any difference in the grand scheme of things, obviously they've been down there for a long time this season, maybe not. But of course, it is always frustrating when a goal like that is given.
And lastly, in a draw which meant Cheltenham will be playing League One football next term, Paul Farman made a very good save from Matty Blair. I like this save. Good save.
Really good save. Yeah, so sharp down to his right. This is another one that is audibly enjoyable. Is that the right phrase? Mm-hmm. I would say that. Like a real kind of crunch of a strike, down sharp, smashes the glove out wide. Just a really, really sharp, very good save down to his right.
That's it, Richard. Can you offer us some goalkeeping goodness just to finish the podcast? Some pearl of wisdom about goalkeeping that you can offer?
Wow, you've really put me on the spot here. I've had no preparation for this whatsoever. Let me think. Some goalkeeping goodness of today. Let's do something based on the time of the year, shall we? The fact that we are now coming towards the summer. Often these can be the hardest games to play, especially if you don't think that you've got much to play for as a team. But what I would say is that the games at the end of the season tend to be remembered that much more than the games at the start of the season, certainly for goalkeepers who are looking to be on the move in the summer. So regardless of your situation, play all out until the season's done. Know that the summer will be an exciting time. I'm sure for so many goalkeepers this summer, we're going to see a massive merry-go-round, certainly in League One and League Two. So finish the season strong. And what are we doing? We're going to be going into the summer soon, Matthew, given that you are very much the producer of this show, as well as being one of the stars of the show or aiding the star of the show. Are we then going to be doing anything over the summer? Are you going to inform me of this? Or
well, we've got some plans. Of course, it is the Euros, isn't it? So we'll be heavily covering that not on a day-to-day basis, because that will be huge overkill. We're already doing 2 to 3 a week, which kind of feel is a bit overkill anyway, but people are listening, so that's good. No, we'll cover the Euros, and of course, some specials like we did in lockdown, I suppose. We'll chuck a few of those in. Some more Number One Mindset podcasts will come out as well. Plenty of goalkeeping goodness, Richard. We're not going anywhere just yet.
Good to hear. Well, that's made my Thursday. Thank you.
Good. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, keepers
away.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.